What's happening, Hardscapers? This is episode 129 of the How to Hardscape podcast, where we talk to you about how you can start and grow your hardscaping business. And today's episode is brought to you by Alliance Gator. Their innovation has brought products like Gator Base, G2 Polymeric Sand, Extreme Edge, Nitro Joint Sand, and a diverse range of geotextiles to the hardscape market. Check them out at AllianceGator.com. And on today's episode, we have Al Levy. He is the creator of the 7-Power Contractor, author of the book of the same name, and he helps contractors all over North America take control of their business, reduce stress, and lead them to success. He specifically talks about SOPs, or standard operating procedures, and I thought this was a great topic to start to get into as we come into the winter season for myself, a slow part of the season, and a good time to start working on the business and to start to think of ways that we can start to improve this, our business. And so I thought Al Levy was a perfect guest to bring on to talk about standard operating procedures with all the help that he's provided contractors. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Today we're joined by Al Levy. He is the creator of the 7-Power Contractor and the author of the book of the same name. He helps contractors all over North America to regain power over their businesses so that they can run them with less stress and more success. Al, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me come along here. So I appreciate the opportunity. Always want to help my fellow contractors out there.
Al, thank you so much. And let's just get started to set a little bit of context for our audience. Let's start with where you started as a contractor. Can you give our audience a little bit of a background of your history in the contracting world?
Okay, but it comes with a warning. Don't disconnect till you let me finish the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have a little trace of my New York accent, but who knows? I've been living in Arizona for 20 years. The reality is I was third generation. My family business is plumbing, heating, cooling, electrical. And if you know where JFK Airport is in New York, that's kind of where we were from New York City backwards. We didn't go into Manhattan, which people think is the only part of New York City, and we went on Long Island. And so that was kind of our business. Our service area was about 115 miles tip to tip in New York City traffic. So talk about challenges. Every day was very stressful. There's a reason that my tagline for the last 20 years that I've been out doing consulting work has been less stress, more success. I was one of the lucky ones that I was making a ton of money, but I could see the end of the road here was not going to be pretty. I was just, you know, a ball of stress. I was 246 pounds. And just for reference, today I'm 195. Wow. And so I knew I had a problem because I walked into a New York City restaurant and the guy looks at me, he goes, "What football team do you play for?" I did that. Maybe I needed to tone my weight down because I was eating my stress like most of us do. Yeah. You know, we all have our things, our choice, alcohol, drugs, whatever. It's not good. We have bad ways to handle it. So that's really kind of where I started. But my family was serial entrepreneurs. And my dad had myself and my older brothers, my two older brothers were my partners. When we were very young teenagers, he would have us in the back of the room when he was having meetings. And I had only one rule. You can't talk. He said, "I'll answer all your questions at the end." So we did that. But we were in the real estate business, multi-state. We were in ice cream shops. We were in liquor stores. We were in radiant heat manufacturer. We did a ton of different things. And the key that I wanted to share with you guys in Hardscape is when people would say my business is different, my father would hold his thumb and forefinger about a millimeter apart because they're all basically the same. And that's the book really speaks to this, which I wrote later on, is the 7-Power Contractor. When I was a contractor and I thought I was a pretty smart guy after a while, I'm thinking there's got to be 7 million things that I must have to master or I would have gotten this figured out. Ultimately, what I learned is there are 7 things: planning, operations, staffing, sales, sales coaching, marketing, and finance. And believe it or not, knowing that there were 7 things was already a big path forward for me. Now, you, my friends, are going to spend the rest of your life at your business trying to master these 7 concepts. What I will share with you, though, is I've worked with some of the best contractors in the United States and Canada. And now I'm lucky enough because my program is online. I actually work virtually with people in Australia, New Zealand contractors. and areas that I didn't work in. I worked with a roofing guy. I've worked with a kitchen cabinetry guy. One of the great ones is a garage door company. And I actually worked with a photographer, a commercial photographer, because again, businesses are more alike than they're not alike. And so that's it. Here's the tidbit I'm going to share with this. None of these great contractors were 10 out of 10 in all seven of those areas, but none of them were zero in any of them. So that's where we start.
Gotcha. So let's get into, I guess that the seven powers. Is there any one of the seven powers that stands out above any of the others, or are they all created equal? And then building upon that, are there any areas or any of the seven powers that you see consistently contractors struggling with, especially?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the way, because I am contractor based, is when I was selling, you know, master bathrooms or things of that nature, the first place people want to take me is to the top floor to see their beautiful master bathroom. And I go, I have to go to the basement first. They go, but that's, I go, yeah, I know what you want to do up there, but if this can't support it. So the two types of companies I've worked with in, for the 20 years since I left my business, they're either one of these two scenarios. They're guys that got in business, they worked really hard, and pretty soon they realized they can't clone themselves. They run out of hours in a day, days in a week, weeks in a month, and they need systems or a foundation. And the other ones I've worked with, guys who have become great at marketing and sales, where they build this monstrous company. The problem is every time the phone rings, they can't handle it. So it's gasoline on a fire, and they bring me in to put a foundation. The foundation, by the way, is exactly the same foundation. It's these seven blocks: planning, operations, staffing, sales, marketing, financial. The most important is the one that I have now put online, which is operating power manual, standard operating procedures. Because at my company, and we were not small, we were 70 to 80 people, 17 million in sales at that point. But every day was like we were in business for the first day. Now, be aware, it started out of my grandfather's gas station in 1936. By the time we were in business, we should be much better at this. And there's a story that goes to that. And if we have time, I'll circle back to it. But operating power is, so there's the org chart first, the org chart, the boxes it takes to run pretty much every contract I've worked with from 1 million to 100 million. And no matter what trade you have, that's really the essence of it, where you're either doing service work or you're doing install work. And there are different wings for that. Very flat, not fancy titles, not CEO, CFO, CIO, CTO, knock yourself out, but that's not what it is. These are the boxes. And then, so think of that as a bingo board. And then your goal is to cover each square with a manual. It's not a manual for everything. It's gold for 80% of what goes on in your company day after day, because our inability, my company, to handle the 80% that goes on every day, that was what was killing us. Once we had that handle, we could deal with the 20 weird. And so that's a big step forward. If I had to pick one that's the weakest, and I was not their coach, my friend Ellen Rohr, who was my co-consultant, we decided a long time ago, we're best of friends, but we're never getting married. We just dated forever. She would handle the financial, which led to sales coaching, which is a fancy name for bonus rewards and coaching up sales performance. She taught them about budgeting and how to arrive at the right sales price, and how they could, the owner, would not be susceptible to being fooled by their own bookkeeper, accountants, and others. Unfortunately, it's a sad tale that has gone on my entire adult life, where I hear about, and it really breaks my heart to this day. You do not have to be an expert, but you do need to know that the numbers being handed to you are right and true. And they have to be arriving in a timely manner, or you cannot make financial decisions. So that would be the first biggest obstacle, is not knowing how to do a budget and the rest of it. And the fastest cure I can still offer to this day is Ellen Rohr's book. And Rohr is spelled R-O-H-R. Ellen Rohr's book is Where Did the Money Go? It is one of the most seminal books for all of us as contractors who want to learn how to take control of, because we work really hard. Yeah. And we hope the money will follow. And that is really one of the goofiest things we ever say.
Right.
Because you could do it all right and not charge enough and you're going broke. Or you just spend too much and you're going broke. So those are kind of the things. Did that kind of address those quick questions?
Absolutely. That's a book that I'm going to go pick up right after this. Really interesting, because no matter the contracting business, we all struggle with that same thing. We're excellent technicians, but we might struggle on, you know, the business aspect side of things, because we love our craft. And because of that love, maybe things fall through the wayside, and that kind of affects our business. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but 3, 4, 5 years down the road, it'll catch up and bite you.
Absolutely. You're right. If you don't really get, you either, and one of the great lines that I learned from a really good friend years and years ago, an industry giant, as a matter of fact, I was lucky enough to call him friend. And he said to me one day, when I was in the middle of this 246-pound stress ball, he said, Al, you either get ahead of it or be prepared to be rolled over by it. And every day I was getting rolled over by it. And again, not a small company. So for those of you like me who had the myth is, oh, if I only get to a certain size, it'll all work out. I remember many years ago, I was at a group meeting, really smart contractors. And we're walking along the river and I'm talking to this guy who has 100 truck output monster company. And I said to him, what's it like to have 100 trucks? He looks at me and he goes, you think there's a magic number of trucks where this will all work? And I go, yeah. He goes, let me tell you, either every day I either have 50 trucks too many or 50 not enough. He said, that's why they call me a manager. And it sounds weird, but it was a great reliever of stress, because I stopped chasing this stupid dream and realizing that I've got to get things under control and be better at managing both scenarios.
Definitely. And speaking of getting things under control, and you've already mentioned this, but SOPs in our business, can you give us like a quick overview of what exactly an SOP is?
Yeah. So policy is, you know, what your rules to play by, and the procedure is how do we get stuff done? So I'm wearing my shirt, top button is unbuttoned, and there's no meatball sauce on my shirt. Again, I'm from New York. So that's, you know, and if you take a picture of me dressed up right, and all you have to do is then wait to see if I actually look this way. Mm-hmm. Your truck, we standardize every truck. So you could jump from truck 99 to 100. Having been a tech, one of the most miserable days is when I couldn't work in my truck and I had to go into somebody else's truck and figure out where all the stuff is. My guys would drive their trucks so long, they actually had to stick their foot out the truck to stop it because the brakes were so bad, until we standardized the trucks. And then we took pictures of all of the ways that everything is. We got young, willing apprentices that could go in and go to any part and grab whatever they need to do. And so they could be an asset when they would get out to the job. But the standardization is really what you're after. So when you arrive at a call, who do you talk to? What do you ask the questions? Even if you're just coming to fulfill an install, so somebody sold the big job and now you're coming to put down the rock, cement, things. I will share a story that is an analogy to what you guys could run into. So I did a big boiler installation, and that's wet heat for those who live in wet heat instead of like things. So this is a big, heavy steam boiler. I'm down installing it. I get finished and I'm leaning back like this, admiring all of what I've created. And then the housewife comes down and goes, it's supposed to be 2 feet to the left. So the point of this is learning great communication skills, which is, so when you arrive, going over with the job, making sure it's clear that you're talking about what the expectations are. Even if someone else sold it, that's really where the handoff's got to be great. Mm-hmm. And so in my box org chart, there's a sales manager whose job is to make sure it was sold right, the big job, and then turned over to the people that are going to make it right and do it right. That was always a problem for us, because in our trade, we either have two cranes lifting something up on a roof or no cranes. Both are bad scenarios. So if it's not somebody's job and you don't have a checklist approach for these, this is where you run into trouble.
I just want to take a moment from today's episode to thank Alliance Gator for bringing you today's episode. They are the manufacturers of a wide variety of hardscape insulation materials, including polymeric sands and other jointing compounds, cleaners, sealers, binders, concrete and plastic edge restraints, as well as Gator Base. Their wide range of jointing compounds suit any application. Cleaners and sealers help to keep hardscapes looking pristine, and their Gator Base product helps to reduce the amount of labor involved in preparing the base pace of a project. They continue to innovate and introduce new products into the market that add more tools in our toolbox, including Extreme Edge, a concrete edge restraint, and Nitro, a permeable jointing compound. You can find out more about these products at alliancegator.com, found in the show notes of this episode, and you can connect with your local rep for installation assistance. Now back to our episode.
Definitely. And that I can empathize with, especially a client coming out and saying it's supposed to be 2 feet to the left. That makes a lot of sense for sure. Now, coming to SOPs, I'm going to throw one at a time, different scenarios for a business wanting to implement SOPs and maybe some things that a owner operator might say against, starting to do these SOPs in their business. One first thing would be, especially if they haven't started right away, and they have these employees that haven't been operating under SOPs for so long, how does an owner start to implement these so as to not maybe overwhelm the older employees, so as to not, get some sort of resistance against the older employees saying, we've done it this way for so long, why are we starting to do this way?
Yeah, no, and that's a great point. They're thinking that everybody's going out the door, and having done this for 20 years all over the place, that's not true. But can you make mistakes? Yeah, you can. So my particular case is think of putting SOPs or what I call operating manuals in place is like climbing a mountain. It's really good if you've never climbed a mountain to have a trail guide to know what you need to do, what are the stops along the way, where do you go in the process. So what you put in is very important. What you leave out is very important. The tone of it, because they will understand that you're yelling at them. Everything is caps. Everything's in color. They're not stupid. They understand that. Everything's underlined. After a while, if you think about child rearing, if you keep saying to your kid, don't, or no, 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 they stop hearing it. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the pitfalls to this. And it's not like trying to take a ball and throwing it against the wall and see how fast it comes back. The goal of putting SOPs or manuals in place is to edit it the right way, in my case, or you, in your case, creating it from scratch so that it's written right, and then getting the right kind of buy-in initially from the right key people, getting it rolled out so they get to put their fingerprints on it. They don't get to hijack it. And they have to understand the really big concept that I share throughout the program is everything is done for the customer's benefit first. Because if it doesn't benefit the customer, we're all going out of business. None of us have a job. Then it has to be good for the company for the long term for it to be good for you, the staff. And we explain that through normal circumstances. So I'll share the story that I was getting to before. I had trained, after we stopped trying to find already skilled people and hoping they would be willing, because that's like finding lightning in a bottle. That's the best description I have. Really hard to do, almost impossible to repeat. And so when you hire young, willing people that are unskilled and provide the skills, that's a much bigger top of the funnel. So we never had this problem after we committed to the manuals, the training curriculum, and hands-on training center where they actually do the work. Now, as landscapers, I will tell you, I actually had a section where I had a swatch of grass, blacktop, concrete, where we would practice breaking it and putting it back. Because nobody knew what we were doing underground, but they sure knew about the grass, the concrete, and the blacktop. So the same thing goes here with your putting rock and any other things that you do. You need that training ground for where that is, but it's not one or the other. Hands-on training center without manuals doesn't work. And manuals without hands-on training center is semi-compromised. Of the first most important, it is the manuals. Because the manuals tell you what you need to put into the hands-on training center. And those kinds of things. But where you park, where you arrive, how you clean up, all these things are what affects your sales and your marketing and those great testimonials that you need to have. These are some of the key things that make a big, big difference in your ability to go and grow in a sane way.
Yeah. Do you suggest when you're rolling out these SOPs, do you suggest employee feedback prior to publishing them and making them what you are sticking to?
I think it's important. And again, I'm just using my program and I don't want it to sound like this is a commercial. So please don't hear that. Now, I tried to write my own manuals for years and years. I do have to share the story is we put together an employee employer-employee handbook, which, by the way, is very important for your company, but be aware, it's just a good CYA. And for those who don't know, that means cover your anatomy, because that's as clean as I can say it. And it's good for that. If you have a labor lawyer or whoever would defend you in court reads that over, but it doesn't help you do your job. Doesn't help if any of those boxes on that org chart, you can't fill them without these procedures being in place. So anyway, I had a 300-page employer-employee book. We're a New York City union shop. I've got an employee issue. I go to court. The judge is flipping through because this is in the days when it was a book. And he looks at it and he goes, this is not written in plain English. And he goes, are you running meetings on it? I go, no. He goes, case dismissed. And I was 25 and I was crushed. But it was the best lesson I learned, because if it's not in plain English and if it's not being rolled out and continually rolled out, it's not worth, in those days, the paper, and now it's not worth the digital space. So there are things about, again, plain English, the tone, nothing's like, it's not like you take a manual and go, you never did hardscape, here's the manual, go get them. We read it together, we practice it somewhere at us, because you shouldn't be at your customer's house learning your job. That's my feeling. We used to call it, we never said it out loud, it's OTJT, which means on-the-job training, which really means you're coming to my house today to learn your job. Yeah. That's not a good thing. So you can't do everything, but we tried, taught them on the manuals, had a training curriculum, went into the hands-on training center. As I said, I've done it with so many different trades that this, not new. And my trades kind of dip into your stuff is, all about backhoes and cranes and things of that nature. Yeah, that's stuff that I'm familiar with. The work is really important, but frankly, before you even get to it, is how well are you maximizing the calls that come to you today? How good is the customer service rep? Because they either make or break everything that happens next. And then how well do they get it to the dispatch department or in the install coordinator, if you're doing just install? How well do they get the lead out to either the tech who goes or the big ticket guy, what I call systems advisor, or if you call a hardscape engineer? And how well do they follow the thing back? That's closing that triangle, if you will. That's really what makes a big difference. One of the things I want to get back to is people think that everybody's going to quit. We were mentioning before. If you explain the things that I shared before, and here's a good story that I always, let's just be clear. All of these stories are way funnier today than they were when they happened. So many years ago, I trained a guy who came to us. He was flipping pizzas. And we provided the skills. He became one of our, we had five install crews a day, aside from the 25 service techs. And I trained him to be where he was one of our best installers. And I opened up the window, this is many years ago, I hand out the job thing and I go, can you read it over? Because I can't be there at 10 o'clock. I can be there at 2. He looks at it, nods his head, I got it. Get to the house, I'm walking around in the basement and I'm looking at the work that he's done and I am livid. Pull him outside to the truck and I go, hey, this wasn't anything the way I wanted. He goes, your brother Richie showed up and said, do it this way. And so the customer was dissatisfied. I was dissatisfied and Bobby wasn't having a great day. And when Bobby and I actually began to talk, he thought that I would lay awake at night trying to figure out how to ruin his day. And I told him that I thought you were laying awake trying to figure out how to ruin my day. The moral of this story is if you don't have manuals, procedures, systems, SOPs, or things are broken, we will ruin each other's day so that we can have a better day. And that's a problem.
Definitely. He
loved it, by the way. The point of this, he went to everybody when we were rolling it out to a New York City union shop. And he goes, do what's in the book, you're off the hook. It's still the line that's around all the shops I ever worked. And they like knowing what are the rules of the game. So at the end of it, if he did everything there, I can't yell at him. Mm-hmm. I can change the book. I can change the digital thing, which is digital these days. Everything's digital. But it's such a relief to know that, okay, I did these. Or I get down to step 10 and I still can't fix it. Now I've earned the right to call my boss and go, hey, I'm at step 10 and still can't get it done.
I like when you mentioned also that at the end of the day, these SOPs are for our clients and to, you know, everything is to benefit them, because if we don't have them, we don't have a business. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, ultimately, I think a great way to connect that to your employees so that they do get some sort of buy-in from that. Now, what does training look like with SOPs, especially ongoing? Do you suggest ever updating SOPs, especially if something comes up?
Absolutely. Yeah. So once they're fully rolled out to everyone that's on that, again, it starts with the org chart. Everyone who has a manual, and again, it's digitally, usually nowadays in either OneDrive, Google Drive, or Dropbox, where you control who can view and who can edit. Only a very few people at the top of that org chart can do the editing. It's not rolled out like it's never going to change, but it's a living document that gets tweaked. But here's the thing. So the history of it is you roll it out, you ask them what's wrong or what do you hate, and they give you the feedback, and then you made a decision about, you know, there's three answers they get about changing. Yes, we can. Yes, but not now, and here's why. And no, here's why. And believe it or not, people are pretty good with that, as long as they know they've been heard. But if you keep saying no to everything they say, well, pretty soon they know you don't want their feedback. So there's a little bit of horse trading that goes on with this. The manuals get rolled out. Now, here's the secret. Your staff is hoping you'll get over your entrepreneurial seizure. And they're hoping they'll go away. And if you don't have them in meetings every week where they read 1 to 2 pages, not you, them, 1 to 2 pages of the manual they have, or in the text case where they have manuals, they win. But that's how you keep it in the culture as you go. And then, as I said, you go through it and go, anybody have a better, cheaper, faster way? Mm-hmm. And if they do, then we will go back and tweak the manual. And because it's digital, it instantly update. No more outdated manuals out there.
Can you overdo SOPs? Is there a case where...
Yes.
Yeah? Well, let's hear
absolutely
about that.
Can overdo an SOP. So the best analogy I use to start with is, we as contractors are perfectionists, or frankly, we would not reach the level of success. We usually were perfect techs, great techs. And it's what made us great is also what kills us. So these manuals never see the light of day. And every day I have my one page of manuals and you have zero, I win. And so that's part of the issue. It's kind of like you're in the garage building a perfect dream car that will never see the road. I'm already doing laps around the track and the checkered flag has come down. I win. The point of this is that you have to let go of perfection. That's part of the problem. The other analogy I like to use is, I don't know about you, but I'm not a chef or wouldn't want to eat the cookies that I would bake. So I need a procedure to follow. And you don't need to tell me to get up from this chair, walk 10 feet to the door, open the door, walk 20 feet down to the kitchen, 20 feet to the refrigerator. That's where it gets crazy. You need to tell me, take out a pan that's 12 by 24, spray it with Pam, make a 1-inch square, drop it on the thing, preheat the oven to 350, let it cook for 30 minutes, use a toothpick, let it cool for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's what, actually every procedure in all of my manuals, nothing's longer than a page.
Thinking about this and thinking about the importance of employee retention, especially for a contracting business, especially in the labor market that we find ourselves in, I see SOPs as being a better tool to use for employee retention, because that new employee, that new recruit is going onto the job site knowing at least a baseline of what they're expected to do, which makes them feel so much more useful on the job site to start out right away, not lost, not confused, which can definitely lead to frustration and eventual them quitting, or even worst case scenario, being fired. Do you see it the same way as a tool for employee retention?
I started with many years ago, I read a book, Employer of Choice. And so like everybody thinks this hiring thing is new. And one of the few advantages of being around this planet a number of times around the sun is that I can tell you that, you know, this is not new. I faced this. Me and my brother were probably 25. We were sitting in a lecture and the guy on stage says the average age of the tech is trending to 50. And as a 25-year-old, we were horrified at the thought of that. And that's when we realized we had to commit to building tech. So this I've been through so many of these phases. When back in the dot-com era in the 2000, when everything bust, back then was before it busted, I started getting, when I was selling stuff, people stopped asking me how much, and they began to ask me how soon. That's how crazy it was. My guys were being headhunted constantly, pirated, trying to get pirated away. Nobody left. And the reason they didn't leave was because they knew we offered a career, not a job. And we didn't just say that as lip service. So that org chart that I'm talking about on that page starts as apprentice to junior tech, to senior tech, to field supervisor, to service manager, or apprentice to junior installer, to senior installer, to install field supervisor, to install manager. And then there's a wing that can actually go up to the big ticket sales. So we did a lot of this promotion. And then also because, as I mentioned, how long my service area is, we had one main hub shop and we had a series of spokes. And the people who went off to the spokes were field supervisors because they could replicate our process with the manuals and the training and hold the same standards. And they also could make money because they would be able to sell these big tickets. Mm-hmm. So it was really a great way to keep them in the game. So the question about retaining, we had enormous retention, and all of the companies that I've worked with rarely lose people that they really want to keep. Being in the manual, in the game, it's rewarded. Plus also the bonuses should be built on performance, which is if they do a job and they bring it in on time, on budget, which is all an installer can do. If it does, they get a bonus, which was figured in by the guy who sold the job, who figured projected material, projected labor inside the office, said actual material, actual labor, gross profit, my commission, and a bonus for these guys, mm-hmm. as an example. Service techs are different in our particular trades, where they go, they make good recommendations. I expect their truck to bring me a certain amount of money. If they bring me anything over that and their sales are good, minimal callbacks, which means you have to go back, then I will be generous with the money they bring me above goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Al, as we close things out here, do you have a story that you can share with us of a contractor that you've worked with where there was just like some sort of light bulb moment that went off and they started to implement some of these SOPs, or they just any of the seven powers that you have where it really turned their business around? Do you have a story that you'd want to share with
us? Yeah, I have multiple stories, but the one that came right to my head when you were talking about is I worked with a really great shop in New Jersey, and they were growing leaps and bounds, and it was out of control. Like I mentioned before, my job was to put the systems in place. And we're working together, and you know, they just were over the top on everything, you know, about chasing the perfection. And by the way, they had awful customer service reps, not my opinion, their own opinion. And by the way, I agreed with them. The end of the story is pretty nice with the manuals and training. Those people actually became part of their website welcoming you in. That's how good they got, the CSRs. But anyway, going back to this, so you know, all of the scenarios with him. And one day he looks over at me and he goes, I got it. I go, what do you got? He goes, less done all the time beats spectacular once in a while. And that was really, that's a big moment that I'm going to share with you, where you start going down this perfect trail or trying to win every battle at the expense of losing the war. Those were the things that changed my life when I got on the other side of that.
That's excellent. Al, thank you so much for your time. This was an awesome interview. Where can our audience go to learn more about Seven Power Contractor? Anything that you want to leave them with to learn more about what you've got going on?
Yeah, so the website's got a ton of good information. Yes, it's my information, but it's time-tested. You're not a guinea pig. There's blogs, there's podcasts, there's all of these things that you can do. And if you're stuck in the truck and you like this voice, I have a radio podcast, which is me reading my blogs aloud. It's the number 7powercontractor.com. Number 7powercontractor.com. No spaces, no hyphens. And if you go to that site, yes. If you're interested in the manual program that we were talking about, when you go to products, you can click down, you can see the whole thing and kind of get an idea about what you're taking on at your own company, whether you do it with me or on your own. That's up to you.
Perfect. Al, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having the opportunity to share.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast episode. Visit us at howtohardscape.com for more information on this subject, or reach out to us on our social channels. We are at How to Hardscape, wherever you can find us, to let us know what you want to learn more about on the podcast, things that you want us to get into in the wintertime, especially on the podcast, or whether that be on our YouTube channel at I Am a Hardscaper there. We'd love it if you subscribe to the podcast, left us a rating and review as we come down to the close of yet another year of the How to Hardscape podcast. And thank you to Alliance Gator for sponsoring today's episode. Go check them out at alliancegator.com. And we look forward to meeting with you next week on the How to Hardscape podcast.